All right, welcome to our special council meeting tonight. We entertain a motion that we begin.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. We'll have a little moment of silence, and then Councilmember Howard will lead us in the pledge. And thank you, Jerry, for noticing the American flag was not here. So, moment of silence, please, and then Mike will take care of it. Thank you.
Rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll let Matt introduce a few things here and get into our discussion.
All right, don't be alarmed by the documents I'm handing you. The intent is not to spend a lot of time on these. You've seen them all before. But I felt like it might be useful. I'm going to pull it up on my iPad here so we can see. Steve, would you mind hitting those lights, please? So I felt like it might be useful for us as a group to just step back for a second. I know sometimes we get talking about the sustainability model, we talk about the strategic plan, we talk about all these different things, and I think it might be easy at times to get a little lost in how they all are intended to be working together. So the first thing is the strategic or the sustainability models. You know, we completed four of those last year, and this is just a summary. The first rendition, if you recall, a year ago, talked about a 42.71% property tax increase in the general fund to start moving in the direction of full sustainability, because year two contemplated another 14.5%, and a year three a 5.21%. As you know, the council moved forward last year with, I think it was like a 21, just slightly over 21% increase to the rate. So the 2018 sustainability model for the general fund, again, assuming we were willing and able to jump and take on sustainability, we would be looking at, you know, close to 40% this year with another close to 16 and 5.21. And you can see over here we've got our water, sewer, and storm. These are the capital improvement plans totals for each year. You know, those are the projects within each of those funds. You know, down here I have a little asterisk that talks about we have $90 million worth of capital assets. That's pipes under the ground, it's roads, it's parks, it's buildings. To put some perspective around, you know, what size of an organization this is. And so these sustainability models, as you know, is an attempt to look out, you know, 5 to 10 years. We originally built them at 10 years, and with the help of Fred at Lewis Young, once you get out 5, 6 years, it gets a little fuzzy, and it gets a little difficult to try and really predict where we'll be. But the intent is what? To have a model and the ability as an organization to look out over 5+ years and say, okay, what kinds of revenues do we need to be collecting in order to maintain infrastructure, maintain these services, and do those kinds of things. So that's the financial sustainability models. The second item I want to touch on is the community survey. Prior to last year, we started every year really right here at the strategic plan. Last year we instituted the ability as an organization to get community feedback from residents through a community survey, and that is something that as an organization, as a council, we can poll the community, we can put out whatever kinds of questions. It's probably time in the next few months that we start putting together another community survey. But it's a great opportunity, a great way to gather information, you know, from the public and determine how are the services we're delivering perceived. We can sit here all day and think we're doing a great job or that we're focused on the right things and realize at the end of the day that we might be off in how that's being delivered or perceived by the residents that we serve. So with those two things, we then get to the strategic plan. And this, as you know, is a 12 to 36 month plan where we take into consideration, or should, the sustainability models, looking out 5 years, feedback from the community through a survey, and working to prioritize, well, what do we need to accomplish? What does all this tell us we need to be working on? In the current strategic plan, as you know, and it's been a part of the strategic plan, there's four broad strategic directives: sustainability, employees, infrastructure, and economic development. So as an organization, right now, we've established that those are the big picture things that we need to be paying attention to over the coming years. And as you know, under each of those strategic directives, we then build specific goals and action plans that we hope to accomplish over the next 12 to 36 months. That now leads to the purpose for our discussion tonight, is the actual spending plan. All of this should filter down to say, okay, we understand the sustainability model, we understand what that means, what that looks like, we understand the community's input and perception of our services. We've had the opportunity to create a strategic plan. Now we're going to build a 12-month spending plan on what we hope to accomplish, where we're going to direct resources over the next 12 months. And of course, that's the budget. And the budget can be broken down into some categories: personnel, operations and maintenance, capital equipment, and capital projects. And so I just wanted to start by kind of stepping back a little bit and saying, look, sometimes we're in discussions about budget, and inevitably we may touch on strategic plan goals, we may touch on sustainability, but ultimately the hope is that all of this informs you as elected officials and us as an organization in being able to sit down and try to prioritize, okay, in the next 12 months in the budget, what do we hope to do, and let's direct the resources to accomplish those things. So that was the only purpose for this. I did hand out copies of the strategic plan, a copy of this community survey, and the sustainability models, just so you could take a look at. When we talk about, for example, the enterprise funds fee increases, right? Based on the sustainability model and what we've got built into that, it contemplates a 6% rate increase. Well, where does that go? What does that do? There's a page number. There's a second page on your sustainability model, the big one, that just shows each utility fund. It shows us just a summary of these projects. So what are we programmed to do with this $530,000 of revenue in water next year? And 556 and 675. And so, again, the intent was not to go into any more detail than that tonight, but hoping that this might be helpful to just remind all of us, we have these tools, we have the ability to have this kind of information put together, and now we'll move into, you know, further working on what you hope to accomplish in the next 12 months through the budget. Any questions about any of that? I just felt like, hey, maybe we need to just step back and remind ourselves how all of this is intended to work together. And I want to reiterate, any of these items, we can jump back into any of these at any time, right? You want to spend more time looking at the sustainability model. If you're concerned that, you know, maybe we've got too much built in the early years, you know, these are meant to be able to jump into, have more discussion, refine their living documents, the strategic plan. So at any time, you as a council member could say, hey, I think we ought to go spend more time in this or on that, or let's get working on another community survey. Here's the questions we would like to ask the residents and get some feedback on. So. Okay. With that, Mayor, I think next we'll turn the time over to Steve.
Okay.
He's going to give an update on some of the meetings we've had the last few days with Councilmember Stewart and Councilmember Strait, and go from there. This is the same information that was emailed out last night. We've made a couple of edits just to hopefully make it a little easier to navigate as we talk through it. The numbers have not changed. We just circled a few things.
I'm going to go over three things, budget methodology, the proposal for the compensation plan, and the proposed utility increase rate, the utility rate increases. I'm going to go over them separately, but yet they are all interconnected in regards to the operations of the city. So last week, when it came time to adopt the acting budget, there was concern in regards to what was in it, how it was put together, and a desire to look at a different methodology in creating the budget. So as Matt said last week on Thursday, he and I met with Councilmember Stewart and Strait, tried to gather a better understanding and an idea as to the direction that they wanted to go forward in formulating a budget. And pull up the first one. So the first sheet that I want to talk about is this one. It's got the red circles down on the bottom. And what this is representing is, so we met on Thursday night, and then Matt and I took that information, generated these numbers that you're seeing tonight, and then we met with them again last night, along with the mayor. So now tonight it's your turn to get them and to, again, I'll try to explain as to how this methodology works. So on this first page, what we're dealing with is the current year budget, which is...
Do you want this pointer?
Sure, I can try
this. The red button.
Right there?
Yeah.
Okay. Shine it in Matt's eyes, if it works. Okay, so this section here is just right off of the financial statements and the budget as it currently is for the current year. This fiscal year adjusted budget, Okay, this is applying the methodology that they were talking about in regards to gleaning the revenue to be just revenues excluding any one-time monies. Okay, so what that means is this number, all of the grant money, all the Class C money, sale of fixed assets, donations, financing, and appropriation of fund balance, all of that has been pulled out of the revenue section of the budget, thus giving us a $9.8 million stream of revenue. Okay. From there, this column right here, I went through the current year budget and made forecasts as far as where is the current year considered going to end. And again, all of the one-time monies have been pulled out. Okay. Because if you, for example, can you scroll back over a little bit, Matt?
If I'm reading it right, are you saying we're going to have about $350,000 shortfall? Is that the 985 minus 1023?
No, that's flip-flop. You got to take the 1023 and subtract the 9855.
Yeah.
So it's a surplus.
Okay, a little surplus then.
Yes,
okay.
A surplus.
Thanks.
But for example, go over a little bit more if you can. So, right here, when we're talking about intergovernmental revenue, this is the big area that gets hit by all of these items being pulled out of the revenue stream. Okay, so just wanted, that's not the only area, but that's one of the areas where there are significant decreases. Okay, we can scoot back over. So after I had my projections, then this area right here, those are the numbers from the acting budget that was presented a week ago but was not adopted. It includes everything. This column here then, as we go across, you'll see option A, B, C, and D. So option A is using the adjusted methodology with no property tax increase, no utility fee increase, and it's projecting then what the revenue stream would be for the city for fiscal year 19. That comes in at $10.3 million. The difference between that and the current year budget is this $485,000. Okay? If we go over to the next option B has the tax increase incorporated of maintaining 0.0029, but there are no utility fee increases incorporated. Here your revenue stream goes to 10.6 because your tax revenue is going from 2.7 to 3 million. So right there's your difference as far as these numbers.
So, sorry to interrupt you here, but A, no tax increase, 0029. B, tax increase to
0.0029, staying at 29.
That's my question. Why does
one say? This is wrong, Matt. Oh. If there's no tax increase,
yeah.
your certified tax rate is going to be 0.002635.
Okay, so technically, option A is decreasing our current from 2.9 to 2.6.
Yes.
That's what I want to make sure.
That's my bad. Yep.
Okay. Yes. Yep.
That needs to be in option B.
Well, and B should just say, instead of tax increase, it should say maintained
certified
current
tax
rate.
Well, maintaining it or tax increase, it's the same thing, because if you maintain it, it's being perceived by the state and the county as a tax increase.
So. But the 2.9 staying the same.
Correct.
That's the, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you.
Yeah. Everything that we've ever put forth as far as information in regards to the certified tax rate is to maintain the rate at 0.0029. Never to go above it, but always to maintain it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Then option C, there's no tax increase, but the utility increases are in play. So you'll notice there's a little bit
Which is the same mistake.
Right.
On option A, we're talking the 6%. When we talk about utility increases, that's the 6% increases, which I put under option A, which is like the
So property. It should be under option C.
Well, then you have no utility increases.
But I put 6%, just so they know that the models are all built off of either the 0.0029 or 6%.
Okay. All right. So option C, no tax increase, utility increase.
Of 6%.
Of 6%.
Perfect. Thank you.
These are then the revenue projections. And then if you go to option D, the tax increase and the utility increases are in play here. And then your revenue jumps up to $10.6 million. Okay. So those would be the projected revenues. Now, these numbers here that are circled, like the 781, the 505, the 760, and the 485, those are what would be considered to be new revenue growth. And that then is the money, conceivably, that would be available to the city to do other things with. And if you go to the next slide.
Steve, one second. Am I accurate in saying that the double asterisk adjusted budget means, and then no grant, no Class C, etc., that is carried over in options A, B, C, and D?
Yes.
Okay. Wanted to make sure that was how I was reading.
Yes.
Okay.
So with those new revenue monies, this then is what Councilmember Stewart and Strait had referred to as the menu. These are things that have been discussed and talked about as far as we would like to do these items, okay? I think the total of these run pretty close to a little over $1 million, if I'm not mistaken. And in the sheets that we just went over, none of that eclipsed $1 million. So based on this methodology then, I believe it comes to, okay, what on this list do you want to fund in next year's budget? Is that a fair assessment? Okay.
I would say the only other thing would be, before we even have that discussion, there might be some discussions as far as that might affect, for example, before we get to our final numbers so we can work this menu, is we have to make some decisions on taxes, we have to make some decisions on utilities.
Right.
So then we'll know where we're at.
Councilman Illustrator, as you're calling it the menu, am I to take from this that we'd be applying priority one, priority two, priority three to this list right here, and we'd kind of go down and say we have enough money up to priority seven and the rest are not on the list?
Okay, and then if you want to make adjustments from there, or if we want to...
But that's kind of the methodology that we're looking at.
Let's decide what our priorities are and then work from there.
Steve, can I ask a question on the sheet with the green?
Yep.
This one?
Yes, okay. Please. So on the acting budget, under total charges for services and transfers, it's $1.9
million. Yep.
And then the amount for all the options is $680.
Correct.
So what makes the 1.3?
All of these monies have been pulled out.
And that's the only... So I thought that those were up on total intergovernmental revenue?
Well,
I was just using that one line item as an example because that one gets hit quite a bit. This one gets hit quite a bit. And you've got other ones that get hit as well because they fall in different categories. But, so your 1.9 million, the 1.9 million is getting reduced by all by your lease financing for the Pumpulence. Based on this scenario, based on options A, B, and C, the Pumpulence has been pulled out of the equation. Any appropriation of fund balance for anything has been pulled. 3 weeks ago, Councilmember Stray said, let's use $500,000 of fund balance to purchase 8 patrol vehicles and put some money towards parks. That's all been pulled. Yes. Okay.
So everything's on the table is basically this menu is your. That's why you what we can choose from.
To the menu.
And of course, we can then have the decision towards the end. Do you want? Does the council want to do appropriation of fund balance or not? And how much, if you're willing to do that? These are all the discussions that we need to
have. Councilmember Schreier, are you at some point going to ask the department heads for their taking from the menu, their priority on this, or is this just the council needs to set their priority?
I think we obviously, for example, lease financing, that'd probably be the big one. I say we decide what we give them, let them decide what they think is the most valuable thing. Now I do have some opinions on some things. For example, the horsepower thing. Me personally, I'm not in favor of that. I don't know if that's going to resonate with anyone else here, but I'm not for the horsepower, although I'm for the lease. So that number on the lease, I may have to adjust that up, or we may have to adjust it based. If that becomes a priority, which it probably won't be with me, then we might have to add those police cars back in.
Do the traditional lease.
So I'm pretty open. In regards to that, I will say the $500,000 has been kind of reduced to $380,000. So, based on the very latest projections, Steve, I wrote down $380,000. Is that right?
Well, that's off of this methodology. I disagree with that based off of the financial statements.
Okay, so we may still have $500,000.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I guess one thing I want to point out, though, if this route is taken, whether you go A, B, C, or D, let's just say, for example, you go with option B. This is projecting 10.6 million for revenue. When you get a budget before you, it's going to say 12 million, not 10.6, because everything that you've taken out of the budget is going to get put back into the budget.
It just won't be appropriated.
No, it will be
appropriate. Appropriate.
Okay. Yeah, you can't not balance a budget.
So Class C, what Class C really is part of our discussion, it's there.
Okay, now let's
yeah.
On this menu though, here's my concern with this whole concept. The acting budget that was presented to you incorporates everything on this menu, some of it to even a higher degree than what is listed up here. These numbers are numbers that I've worked with for months, and I have a fairly good level of confidence with the numbers that were put in the acting budget. This new methodology, the ABCD, I've worked with those numbers for one day, so I don't have near the level of confidence in if this is implemented, is it going to get the city where it needs to be, where it was determined on the strategic plan the council retreat and all of that. So that's a concern for me as the finance director. Obviously, whatever you decide, we will implement. But I think it's not, I guess, I don't necessarily want to give the impression that I'm not biased here, because obviously I am. I think, you know, this is was a good document. But having said that, those are my concerns in regards to going through this process. Can it be done? Yes, it can. We're starting very late in the budget process to do this. But there again, it is what it is. So,
Matt.
Steve, I don't want to shift this too far, but I guess my thought as I'm thinking through this is, so the sustainability models were built, and there's some assumptions made in revenue growth, expenditure growth. I think one thing this exercise helps us understand is, outside of any increases, what's that natural growth? So that would be what your sales taxes, any franchise fees, fines and forfeitures, you know, things that are just, you know, we would hope would continue to go. So I'm just thinking, okay, if the sustainability model, is it fair to say if the sustainability model called for 40%, right, truth in tax increase in property taxes to jump all the way there, couldn't we now back out of that to say, well, our growth probably, it looks like it exceeded the 3% built into the model. Are you understanding where I'm going?
Yeah, I think so.
So if we grow faster, then is it fair to say that 40% now would take 36 or 37%?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just trying to...
We're not sure what the number is, but it would be reduced.
Well, it would be whatever that would be, right? What do you want to go to?
Go back to the other slide. Because there's something, you know, for example, shift over. Okay, so here, take a look, and this, I think, touches a little bit in regards to what Matt was talking about. This line item right here, licenses and permits. The budget is 339. And if you go over to my year-end projections, 444,000. So we're 105,000 above budget. Next, in the acting budget, it was budgeted at 349. So there is $100,000 of revenue less projected just in this one line item. That's because in the current year, we had all the building permits from Skyline come in, okay? So obviously that's not going to happen again, but that creates some of that.
It could.
Yeah,
it could.
But it's not year over year.
I mean, it's not, you can't.
Right.
Yeah. You can't plan on it.
Right, if Teresa or whatever.
But this has added to that revenue growth above what was predicted in the sustainability model.
But you always have outliers like that. We have the outliers with fines and forfeitures this year. We don't know if fines and forfeitures are going to be that way next year, because we have anecdotal evidence that because of 40th Street, we had more fines and forfeitures because of 45th Street. So it's always that way in a budget. But I think you've been conservative on this budget, correct?
Yes.
And since you've been conservative, unless we have something crazy going on in the economy and we drop, we're going to collect revenue above and beyond your conservative projections. I think that's a good thing, and we can deal with that as we go through the year. It's easier to work in that direction than it is to work the opposite.
Sorry.
I mean...
Well, that's true, because when you do a conservative budget, that corresponds then to conservative expenditures. And when you have then the revenues that come in above what you projected, that allows for you to make budget amendments, which are required. For example, this year, we did amendments for the planning, the contract for, I mean, we did a lot of amendments, but some that come to mind specifically, the planning professional and technical. We did amendments for the fire, overtime and part-time wages. That allows for you to do those types of budget amendments without allocating fund balance, because you can adjust your revenues a little bit once you see how the revenues are flowing in. So yeah, both of them, revenues and expenditures, are conservatively budgeted. So that is, I guess, part of the puzzle for tonight's discussion. Do we want to move to the next part? Because like I said, they're all interrelated, but yet I think each needs to have a little bit of its own discussion before it is melded and then discussed as a whole.
Mayor, at least I just asked Brent and Susan, as having been a part of those couple meetings, before we maybe jump to the last thing we've prepared for tonight for discussion, is there any more discussion you feel like we'd like to have about this? I mean, we'll come back to this, I'm sure, but for the sake of, do you want to discuss this all now, or do you want to move and present the last thing regarding the benefits and look at that and then have a bigger discussion?
So here's how I'd like to see it take place. I would like to talk about any issues such as have ambulance fund that Susan wanted to talk about, Adam wanted to talk about, franchise.
The enterprise funds.
Enterprise funds. So anyway, any issue that may affect our numbers, let's work through those right now, and whatever ideas come out as far as that. Then when we get our, because we might need to adjust our options a little bit here and there, if we can get that out of the way, and so I guess, I don't care where you start, but let's do...
I think let's do this, and then they can have those discussions that weren't necessarily documents and stuff prepared for them.
Okay, we'll get through that, and then...
Okay, so topic number two out of three. Compensation. Okay. Matt's going to bring up the report. This compensation plan is, again, it came out of those meetings. These are items that Council Member Strait and Stewart would like to see considered in regards to the employee compensation plan.
And caveat, this is not necessarily the entire compensation plan, just one element of it.
Okay. And again, I've taken the information from those meetings, put it down, met with them again. So I think what's going to be presented tonight takes us in the direction of the thought process that both of them have been going down. Basically, it comes down to this. It's a couple of different areas. There's three assumptions that are being made in this information. Number one, in regards to insurance premiums for health and dental. Okay, those are being combined, and then there's an 80-20 split in which the city pays for 80%, the employee pays for 20%. Okay. That's assumption number one. That 80-20 split is across the board, regardless if you're family, two-party, or individual coverage.
What does two-party exactly mean? I'm sorry.
Two-party could be employee and spouse, employee and child.
How's that different than family?
Family's everybody, all six of your kids, your spouse.
Family is
big.
More than two.
So, okay.
Yeah, two kids.
Individual, two people, and then two plus people. Or three plus people.
Three plus.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So that's assumption number one. Assumption number two, anybody that the incentive that is given to opt out of insurance right now will go away. Employees will be given a choice to either be on the plan or off the plan. If they choose to be off the plan, there will be no incentive given. And then assumption number three is that the HSA contribution will be cut for those employees that are on the plan from $1,500 a year to $900 a year. Okay.
Can I? Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Tell me why somebody would opt out without an incentive. I understand with the new, we'll call it Obamacare, the opt-in, opt-out doesn't hurt or help them as much, right? But why would somebody just come forward and say, okay, for the good of the city, I'm opting out?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't think it'd be that. I think it'd be their spouse already has insurance, better insurance at their place, so they just don't get involved here. What's our incentive right now to opt out?
The incentive right now to opt out is, it's two-part. If you opt out of the health insurance, there's a $1,500 contribution, or a $1,500 incentive. If you opt out of the dental plan, there's a $500 incentive. So, currently, we have 15 employees that opt out of our coverage. Okay.
So, Steve? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, 15 that have opted out of both health and dental?
A combination.
Okay.
And all of them have opted out of health.
Are those numbers included in this?
No, they are not.
And with your projection here, how many do we think may opt out?
Well, I don't know, but I ran some numbers just because I figured it would be pertinent to the conversation. If we have, out of the 15 that we have opting out right now, we incentivize them with a total of $27,600. Okay? Of those 15, if only 7 of them join our plan, and I don't know what level of participation they will be, so I assumed a two-party coverage. The premiums for that are $87,000. So the city just added $60,000 to their expense line item. Mm-hmm. Then I thought, okay, I'm going to simplify it, and all 15 people that have opted out, if all 15 join the plan at just the individual coverage, the premium then is just over $90,000. So it's even more expensive. What is the probability of these people joining the plan? Again, I don't know the answer to that one.
So, Steve, there was one other item, and maybe this accident left off. So, for those who have medical coverage, we're going to put $900 into their HSA, down from the $1,500. But for those who opt out, we're going to put $900 into their 401k. Remember, we had
to. Okay. That's not incorporated in any of the numbers that that are on this sheet.
But in partial answer to the question, when we ran into this, see, for years we had family plus single, and it double covered us. We had zero copays, zero out-of-pocket. We were double covered. With the new plans, we could buy a two full family coverages, and would do us absolutely zero good because you still have to pay, you have a high deductible plan, you still have to pay the $5,000. And initially it was six, but then they dropped it to five, and then you have a smaller amount you have to pay between five and six, and then it's full coverage. So, yeah, things have changed quite a bit in regards to.
Okay, there is some coordination of benefits, but it's severe. Mm-hmm. If you're double covered.
Okay, so that gives you some information on the opt-out. So now let's go into the real gist of the philosophy that they're bringing forth. So this information on the sheet breaks it down between family, two-party, and individual, and then also between police, fire, and non-public safety. And the overall concept that they are going after is, I'm going to use the family. I'm going to use the family police officer as my example that we talk about, but all of them are theoretically on the same premise, but the numbers change just a little bit for various reasons. So in this scenario, the 20% for this is almost $300 a month. Annually, it's $35.96. Okay, so that would be the employee's annual contribution towards their premiums. Okay. The thought process then that council members Drake and Stewart wanted to incorporate was the premium that the employee pays is then eventually given back to the employee through an increase in pay after subtracting out the Social Security and retirement portions, because as you increase a person's pay, those are going to be costs that the city will incur. So take that $3,600, $275 of it is Social Security, $1,285 is retirement. That gives you a net of $2,036. Divide that by 2,080 hours, which is the number of hours a police officer works during the year. That equates to a 98 cents per hour pay raise. Then down on the bottom, this is just a summary of everything. This is the premium payment, the reduction in the HSA. This is the amount of the raise based off the 98 cents. In this scenario, the employee would come up in the red, $2,157. Okay? And as we go through this, so the fire scenarios are exactly the same, except the retirement contribution is a different percentage. The non-public safety, again, exactly the same, except the retirement percentage is different. But as you look at these numbers down on the bottom line, every single scenario ends up in the deficit.
They will have less withholding themselves, however. Right?
Well,
but
yes.
But we can offset that with the other pay increase.
And part of the less withholding will relate to that these premium contributions are done on a pre-tax level. That's what you're referring to, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
As well as their HSA contributions.
That's only if they do contributions to the HSA.
Can they currently do HSA contributions?
Oh, yeah.
And what percentage or how many do it right now?
We have, so there's 61 basically, there's about 60 that are on the plan that can do it. I would say we probably have 50 to 53, maybe that, it's a very high percentage because so, even though the city contributes $1,500, the deductibles on our insurance plan are $3,000 and $6,000.
Right.
And IRS allows for an individual to contribute about $3,400 into the HSA, and for a family, it is up to $6,700, $6,800. So
And next year will be 69.
Yeah, but we have a pretty high percentage of participation in the HSA program.
The difference between that and your flex spending, if you didn't use your flex spending,
you lose it.
You lost it. The HSA is perpetual. So I've actually built mine up to where this coming year, I could be fine and not put a penny in it. But I do because that money comes back to me, and it comes back tax-free. It can earn interest, unlike the old flex spending. The HSA is much better, but
So if, do you have a question?
Well, I just want to see if I'm looking at this.
Does this make sense as I explained it to all of you in regards to what the thought process is in regards to these monies?
There was one other thought process. If you're on tier one,
I was just going to say, all of these assumptions and the examples that I've given to you are all based on tier one employees.
Which is our vast majority.
But it is, but we probably have now 12 to 15 employees that are on tier two. So, pardon?
Perfect.
No, come on.
Last year we only had a handful.
No, I have. Someone said like three.
Well, I have at least five.
Yeah,
new people.
We only have
the young guys are tier two.
In the city, we have about 15 that are on tier two: police, fire, and non-public safety. And their percentages for retirement are lower. Like tier two, public safety, police is 24.99. So,
tier one.
Oh, 35.71. It's right on your sheet.
Oh, it's on there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. You're right.
But
I just said it.
Yeah.
I don't want to backtrack our discussion, but I just want to see if I'm looking at this. So, am I right if I go up and we see that is that the amount then that right now the city is paying on behalf of these employees, the family, two-party individual per month?
It is.
So if I times that number by 12 for a family plan, I'm coming up with $19,480. Okay? I use my calculators.
Okay.
I guess I'm going back to the opt-out discussion, because if you said $1,500 for 15 employees totals $27,000, if we have just one of those 15 participate in a family plan, that's $19,000. So two employees on a family plan is kind of that. On a family plan, assuming the city still pays 100%.
So no marriage policy.
If they were to opt in, instead of not having to pay anything like they do now, would be the almost 300 times 12, which is...
Yeah, but the city would still be paying $1,200 a month, even
right
after that.
Right, but they would also be ponying something up. They would be paying something out. So it's not like, shall I do this or not? There's no cost to me. Now it's, shall I do this or not? There's a cost to me.
Right. But
that's
there's
what we do.
There's that $300 a month cost plus a $6,000 deductible that is then being placed upon the employee. So it's not just $300 you're talking about. You're talking about $3,600 in premiums and $6,000 as a deductible, because our insurance does not pay a penny until the deductible is met. So, okay, now I'd like to go back to the top here and just do some extrapolation of these numbers. Currently, this is the breakdown as far as family, two-party, and single. This is the annual employee responsibility that's being proposed multiplied by these numbers. So just on the health and dental, we're looking at almost $180,000. And then the reduction of the HSA from 1,500 to 900 for 61 participants is another $36,000. And the total then is $215,000 would fall upon the employees' shoulders as far as responsibility in regards to the benefit calculations here.
So one of the challenges I've had in looking at this is, let me say the positive first. One of the positives for the employees, if you're in tier one, you are 20 years, you get 50% of the average of your top 3 years. If you add to their pay, even if they're having to pay out more insurance, 50%, that's adding 50%. So let's say pay goes up by $4,000. Okay? Maybe their take home doesn't go up as much as we would like, or they would like, but that goes straight to your retirement. Go straight to your retirement, and in essence, $4,000 becomes an extra $2,000 per year, every year, for the rest of your life. And then as things move along, that's the way it goes. So I know in my field of work that many, many years we've opted out of benefits in exchange for increase in pay, even if our take-home stayed the same or actually diminished a tiny bit. For example, I've always put the max in my HSA because it's tax-free money that eventually becomes money. It's a little bit of sacrifice. I'd like to have that 500. It basically turns out to be 500 bucks a month, every month. But it's valuable. First of all, I have the assurance that I'm backing myself up in case we have something really bad happen medically. But the other thing is that money's always yours, unlike the flexible spending. So I think that's one positive. I think to make this work, the city council would need to pony up on top of the $215,000. That all goes straight back to the employees, straight back. We're not trying to
an hourly salary.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And then let's supplement with enough to where no one's pay, take-home pay goes down.
So $300,000 essentially by the time you pay Social Security, Medicaid, all that, et cetera, for them. Or are you saying they're taking...
Well, this is the total savings, $215,000. But
right, but if we're going to put it back into their compensation,
right,
then all the, you know, the taxes that are associated with your income are going to increase incrementally as well. So we can't just go $215,000. We could, right? But they'd end up with a smaller take-home pay still.
However, one thing, if you look at the current tax law, which is coming into effect, you basically double the standard deduction. That is going to impact positively this as well. It won't help you on the state end. You'll pay a little more in state taxes, but I would imagine that most of our employees don't itemize. And that being said, this new tax level will impact this very positively. I don't know what it'll look like with withholding, but employees are already ahead from the previous year based on current tax level.
So really it's a trade-off. They're getting $2 an hour maybe, if you add some more to it, $2 an hour pay raise, but paying more each month for insurance. Is that?
And my concern is, and this has happened in the past, and I discussed this already, is exactly that. It's a walk where we're saying, yeah, hey, you know what, we're going to pay you more, but we're also taking more for this, and it's demoralizing to that employee, because you're saying, hey, we value you, we're going to play more, but we're going to get it on the back end.
But in some ways, for that employee, that's a thought without a vision. It's without a long-term vision of what that pay increase will mean.
And I see what you're saying. This is exactly what happened in the county, though. And when it happened, they had a mass exodus based on that.
Well, that's why I said we have to pony up, in addition to the savings that go directly, we've got to pony up enough in additional monies to make it work. You say it didn't work in the counties because they didn't pony up additional monies on top of the insurance savings. Okay? You have these savings, you put it back in your salary, you're going to have to increase some more in order to make it work. If you don't, they won't like this at all.
I think most police officers and probably fire take it on as a career. I want to work here. I'm going to get my 20, my 30, whatever the case is. That's the kind of their goal. Outside of public safety, so I don't know how many of those 61 employees now we subtract, how many of them truly look at South Ogden as a 30-year career spot?
I think that's an interesting question, because Councilmember Strait's correct in regards to the Tier 1 employees and how this would bolster their retirement,
right,
conceivably. The Tier 2, where now they're required to work 35 years and 25 years, we are currently in an environment where, you know, we've talked about our staff and employees as far as retaining them, but recruiting them. Mm-hmm. Recruiting millennials is a whole different ballgame than recruiting a generation ago. Very few millennials are going to be coming into not only the city or any job anticipating that they're going to be there for 10 years, let alone 25 and 35 years. You know, we've talked about doing signing bonuses for police officers. With some millennials, I think you're better off offering them a free iPhone with unlimited data and having a large mocha Akimoto cappuccino something for them there in the morning versus a retirement plan that they can tap into in 35 years. Granted, there's going to be some where the retirement plan is attractive, but that's not the dynamics of the recruiting world that we exist in anymore. We have to come up with ways to attract the millennials.
With the higher hourly wage to it.
Well, and I don't know what the answer is the problem. I don't know if Doug does, I don't know if Darren, I don't know if any of us know. We have to be, you know, working and planning and experimenting with that. But the 35-year retirement, or the retirement that an employee gets from working with a city, isn't nearly the draw that it was for the Tier 1 employees. And that is causing problems not only for South Ogden City, but for all municipalities in regards to recruiting people.
And if they're defined contribution, then that's a whole other problem.
Right. So that's my concern is, A, it doesn't attract, and B, it doesn't retain. And our current, I'm not against it yet, right, but our current see it as, thanks for decreasing my wage by $3,600 this year. Yeah, you gave it back, but I didn't see it. I just have higher taxes. And you're right, the numbers when you're 70 are sweet. I got $2,000 more, but I don't know how many of our employees, when they're 35 years older, are thinking, sweet, I just made an extra $2,000 when I'm 70.
So you're saying a 401k, because I think something needs to be done, and we actually talked about this as well, is the idea of boosting up the wages, treat it like a triangle, and say this bottom of the triangle is where we need to put some extra resources. How do we bridge the gap between the 25% and the 35% for for public safety. I think that's a discussion. I don't necessarily know how that's going to be done. You talked about they're different as far as what incentivizes. I don't know on that.
Is this something the compensation study would get into and give us some data?
And since you brought that up, and I gave an opinion on the budget process we talked a little bit about ago, whether you wanted it or not, I'm going to give you an opinion on this as well. I think theoretically there could be some validity to going down this road. However, at this point, as the governing body, I believe you need to be very, very careful, and this could be a very slippery slope and a disastrous thing. And this is why I say that. Ever since January, we've wanted to get this compensation class study done, since we talked about it in the retreat. And it was pulled off the table, it was put back on, it's in the budget, it was pulled from the budget, it's in the acting budget, but it's not in the new concept budget. If you implement this, you have no data to back up the concept that the employee's compensation package is too high. Okay? If you pull the plug on this, there means, I think it's going to, number one, I think the employees are going to feel blindsided, because until last night, there were probably only five people, even in this room, that were aware of this concept. And we're again in the 11th hour of the budget process. If that study can be done, and it's determined that, you know, this is a sound way to go, maybe then we move forward with that, but we have the data to back it up.
And time to get some information.
And time to educate the employees, to communicate this process, to communicate the goals as far as how it can work for you as a benefit into your retirement. Okay. If the study comes back and it doesn't validate those hypotheses, and you've pulled the plug on this, there's no going back. You will have lost employees. You will have lost any trust, respect, and confidence that the employees have in the governing body moving forward with this city. I just caution you in regards to doing this, unless you are 100% sure that this concept is not going to harm the employees.
Steve, if I'm 15 years, I'm tier one, police officer, I'm looking at this plan and I'm looking at my chops. Because right now, let's say it goes up $4,000 or $5,000, I'm looking at it right now and saying, you know what? Yeah, I'm transferring 20%, I'm not paying $300 a month, but I'm getting $400 a month more, and that's why I'm only getting $100 more, but I'm gonna have that money, I'm retiring in 5 years, I'm gonna have that money for my retirement.
For good or for bad though, isn't it possible that the employee looks at us as making a willy-nilly decision, and they're in 2 weeks from now all of a sudden having a major change in their compensation package without any introduction to them that we're considering it, we're doing a study, we're looking out for their best interest, we want to know how we can help them, and the word gets around that we're trying to find a solution. Don't we run the risk of they're ticked off, they didn't have a say in it, they didn't talk to their department heads, they didn't have, we didn't get a good feel for them, and all of a sudden it's just, boom, there it is in my...
Except I wouldn't take effect in 2 weeks, because it wouldn't take effect until the new enrollment health insurance year. So it would be January.
Okay. After, I have another question.
I was going to say, I think that is what very well said, Steve, how you presented it, and I told you already, I'm not completely opposed to it. I've worked for three different city governments, and I've never had a city that's paid 100%. But I don't think, I think what we're trying to do right now, and that's why I said, I think Steve said it very well, I just don't think it's the right time. I'm not against it at all. But I don't think, I think it's going to be perceived bad.
You know, I think in this scenario, you have two wage earners in a household. You both have insurance options. And the other spouses or individual, their plan is a little bit better than South Ogden. So based on how things currently are, they're going to go with the one that isn't South Ogden. As long as we're the Cadillac plan, we're going to be the go-to. And you know what? Our plan's better over here. So all of a sudden, you choose a different plan. I'm not paying the premium. I got my pay raise, and I'm not paying the premium either. Because you have to make a choice. Now, if you're, it doesn't work that way if the other significant other doesn't work, or you have just you and your two children. But in those, each of those scenarios, you have, you're now a family, and even though you don't have that, now you get a full deduction on your taxes. Yeah.
That's the thing. For some, I think it's good. For some, I think it's not so good. It's in the middle there. And I think a lot of this is anecdotal. So my thought is maybe. This might be where we go, but I think we're rushing it just a little bit.
I get your point, Brett. That's if all they're focused on is their medical and dental insurance plan. And what some of the comments are, to Steve's point, is it ought to be looked at collectively as an entire compensation package, so that it's not just, well, I'm going to go with this dental plan or medical plan because it's better than South Ogden's. Well, it may be that it's better, or South Ogden's is worse, but you may have to pay more in another city, part of your premium, but what other benefits does that city provide that maybe makes it worth that employee that wants to work there? Say, oh, you know what, I'll pay 20% of my premium because they have an adopted step system where I know where I'm going to be in my pay in 5 years. I get a bonus at the end of the year. I get paid leave off for certain. I mean, we don't know what other benefits. So I'm concerned that we're picking one thing out of an entire compensation package and saying, because other cities do this, we should do it, without stepping back and recognizing, well, where does that put us on the competitive scale on a total compensation type of a package? And you know, we talked about this, Brent, in our meetings, was like, I agree that I think I could get on board with this idea of saying, hey, Let's make them pick up a percentage. That seems to be more common. Let's channel that towards, you know, more aggressive pay, if that's important. But I see that happening once you as a council have identified what your methodology for pay is and what level you've determined you want to compete at, so that you're just not making a change and saying we're going to give more money. You're going to say, we're going to do it. Here's how our pay philosophy is. Here's how we're going to approach compensation moving into the future, so that it's a part of a more comprehensive look at where we're really at. And I think that's, well, to me, the important part that needs to be looked at is you know.
Perception is reality, and the people who build the perception are sitting in this room right now. And, you know, you talk about, well, how's this going to be perceived? It's going to be perceived based on how it's presented. And it's not how us as a council are presenting, it's how the rest of the room is presenting it. Now, the perception is that you go out west here and to a city with a lot of businesses, and you're going to make a lot more money as a police officer. That's the perception. Okay? Where does that perception come from?
Hourly wages.
Well, because they have some steps and lanes, and I'm for that. I'm not against it. We can build it. We don't have to debate the whole structure we can put forth a plan, and then it can be put together by staff. But I looked at a sergeant here, a sergeant there. They have less benefits, higher pay. That's wages. We have more benefits, a little bit lower pay. So
I think they do a pretty healthy 401k contribution.
Yeah, that's all included within it. Their total package, our total package, is almost exactly the same when you go apples to apples. But how you divide up that apple is what changes, whether it's 401k or whatever. I'm willing to go down that road. Councilmember Hensley's brought up the 401k. Okay, and what always comes down to it, Councilmember Smith said it, and others have said it, I'm a police officer, it's all about the pay. Don't talk the benefits, I want the pay. Give me the pay. Because my first 2 years in the council, I brought up 401ks. Hey, we can provide this 401k, and we can give them 4%, and it only costs us 2, you know? Or 2.5, may have been closer. But the truth of the matter is I got shot down every year because they want pay. So, in essence, what are we being told? Give them pay. So, something's got to give somewhere. The bottom line is, I'm trying to put us in the best position in my philosophy or my thoughts on this, to give our officers and those who work in public safety more pay, even above and beyond break even. If we did this and then didn't back it up with additional money, then we'd be cutting their paycheck. I think that's a road to disaster. That's what we're talking about, road to disaster. But if we do this, we pass it on, and we bump up enough that it's not a decrease, then I think we're successful. Here's the bottom line. We don't do anything. The amount of money we have is limited anyway. We can't give them much unless we do things differently. So we either just go ahead, give them 3%, just do the same old. We have the best health coverage anywhere, so no one's opting out of ours. Or we're bold. We back it up with additional resources. For example, let's say in addition to the 215, let's say we put another 215 at 430. 430,000. Okay? Could we make it that every, if we had $430,000, could we make it that every employee's paycheck wouldn't go down? I mean, that's not me to figure out. I don't know the answer to that. But that's what we need to know. And I think we could make it work. Yeah. Heck, that's a lot of money, guys, for a little city like this, number of employees. Yeah, they're giving half of it, we're giving the other half. How much does the 3% work out to be? What's the total of the 3%?
I think on your menu it's $158,000.
We're even going above 3%.
That's just the general fund portion.
Well, the other funds pay the their, okay, whether it's sewer
right,
or water,
but you,
right?
You can't step up the sewer and water and storm drain fund employees without having an impact of doing the same thing on the general fund employees.
I'm just talking what's on this menu.
Right, everything on the menu is general fund.
It's a general fund.
Yes. But
so 3% is $158,000.
Mm-hmm. Right. But
so
3%, I don't think, is going to rectify all of these red numbers that are on this data sheet that we've been working with. Because just every single scenario showed the employee losing take home pay, some of them up to $2,000. So what you're suggesting is we have to rectify that pay, But then on top of that, just gets the employees back to where they were. You're not even addressing them, like in the acting budget, there was a COLA for all employees of 3%. You're not even addressing that aspect of it. If you plunk in, say, 300, 350,000, whatever it is, that just gets you back to where you are right now. So it's a multi-step process that you're talking about, and it's not...
Well, I will agree with this. It does need to come in steps, probably. 80-20 might be a big jump at this point. But we could go 90-10. That's a lot. That's not as big a jump. It limits us a little bit on the other side. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is this. I don't need a study to tell me what they're doing in the county. I don't need a study to show me anywhere in Utah. Stuff's public information. Now, it is 1 year old, but it's all there. I don't, and we can see what they're spending, the total budget. I know that in 2017, Riverdale spent $2.335 million on salaries and wages for their police. And in South Ogden, we were at 2.6 something. You know, it's all out there. That's just salary and wages. Okay? So, in some ways, we can just scrap this and move on. It doesn't take effect until January. The bottom line about tonight's meeting is saying, here's our money, we do different options. Here's our menu of stuff, and what do you want to spend? You want to spend more than that, even. You want to go into fund balance. I mean, that's our discussion tonight. I'm not getting caught up in the nitty-gritties of this, although I think this is a step in the right direction. Now, we have 6 months, right, on this part?
You have to have a budget by August 17th.
And okay.
I mean... So,
but it's a kind of a commingled thing.
The city's health insurance renews January 1st. Yes, that is correct. Because we're on a calendar year renewal, not a fiscal year renewal.
But at any time, I don't see that those things are as related as we want to make them. That's when our plan renews.
Correct.
At any time, we can change how that plan is paid for. I mean, those aren't exclusive. You could just, I mean, that we're gonna pay the premium for our plan. It's who's paying that premium. Is the city paying it as it has been, or the employee starts to contribute and we start to pay the premium? So I don't know that. I'm not against, you know, a phasing implementation, if that's the direction we go in 6 months, seems, but I don't think it's fair to say we couldn't make a change until our plan changes, because all they want from us is a check for the premium.
Okay, number one, right? I want to be aggressive about putting us in the best position for the compensation, specifically of the area where we have a supply and demand problem. And that's with police. Okay? I want to be aggressive with that. We have limited resources to do that, but I want to give everything we can to that one issue. Every dollar that we can come up with to that issue, because if we can keep turnover at a minimum, not all turnover is bad, but if we can keep our best employees, if we hold them harmless and they don't see a decrease in their pay, especially with our younger officers, sergeant below, then I want to be aggressive on this. And we can work out the details. I'm not against creating steps and lanes. I talked about that in our meeting. We want to even make aggressive steps and lanes for that first year or two. Be very aggressive. Okay? Here's what you find out in public, when you work in the public sector instead of the private sector. In the public sector, you're never going to get wealthy, but you have some great benefits, especially the pension. It's one of the best things about working in the public, besides working with people. That's the other benefit. But in regards to this, we can help ourselves out. If our perception continues that we don't pay as well, then we're not helping ourselves out. Yeah, we got to go above and beyond. We got to cover that deficit. We got to go above and beyond that. But it puts their pay up. And it'll keep total benefit package wise. I don't know what all is in it with Riverdale, but I can see what the bottom line is as far as the numbers. And I can see that they have total package benefits less in South Ogden. But I also see that they have a little bit more as far as pay goes. I'd like to reverse that. Keep about even with benefits, the other entities around, but I'd like to be above on pay. Same on equal on benefits, more on pay. That's what I'd like to see. I think that gets us where we want to go as far as keeping our employees. And I'm not saying another word about it.
Pat, did you have something as a pest? Did you raise your hand?
I think it's premature.
I think it's a good idea overall.
It's a good idea. I think the idea is good, but I agree with we. If we're going to do that, we can't just at the 11th hour pick something that is good and not have enough global look at how it affects the total package. So I would say we don't incorporate it, but that we do the compensation study so that we can come back with some a presentation to the employees and how it's helpful, not just impose something helpful. So I think we're just premature for a good idea.
Susan?
Does the compensation study look at staffing levels as well?
No, it just looks at the total compensation. It looks at the pay specifically, and then there is a total compensation value. So look at what the total compensation package is.
And in its comparisons, it defines, we call them different things, but it defines that, I guess, occupation or that role, so we can compare, truly compare apples to apples.
Yeah, so for the police officers, it's easy because a police officer is a police officer is a police officer. However, let's say a lieutenant at South Ogden is going to be different than a lieutenant in Salt Lake City. Or the water maintenance one, that's when it really gets crazy because a water maintenance one in Layton is apples and oranges to a water maintenance in South Ogden. So that's what the compensation, they look at the job
the roles,
responsibilities, and then they match them up that way.
Same with fire.
Well, I think Councilor Stewart's brought up a great point. You know, how many cities between 15,000 and 20,000 people? Let's look at staffing levels. I mean, imagine all of them has city managers, unless they have a strong mayor. So, like I said, North Ogden have a strong mayor, right?
And a city administrator now.
And a city administrator, yeah.
Yeah.
Not sure we want to base ourselves on North Ogden.
No, I'm just saying. Yeah. I think it's not helpful if it doesn't include staffing levels.
Yeah, I don't know that that's. I don't know if they do that. This particular consultant that does the comp study.
It's not a job of a class comp study.
Right.
Because I just don't see the value in it.
because there's a lot more to it than just looking at what other cities do as well. There's the job classification stuff to ensure that like positions within our organization are compensated at the same type of level. They look at compression issues. You know, what should the appropriate distance be between a police officer 1, 2, and 3, for example? If you throw all your money at police officers 1, for example, not that that's the intent, what does that do now with compression? You're going to have a sergeant who, now you've got police officer 1s and 2s, you got a sergeant with a much higher responsibility level. You know, so it looks at all of those kinds of interplays between, you know, what you pay people for, what their responsibility levels are, how they compare. Do you have proper separation between different positions for compression? So it's easily oversimplified, but it's actually a very technical stuff. Like I said, Doug and I have MPAs. There was no class that we took that give us into this kind of details. I don't even know that through SHRM with your HR courses, you don't get into this level of analysis for a class comp study. It's much more than simply looking at what another city does and start. That's what we've been doing, as we compare the market. And we are saying that the process we've used as staff, we no longer feel it's adequate. Is it 400,000 that you want to throw, add 200 to the 200 that's up there? Is that going to be enough? Is it too much? It's going to come back to, well, what's your pay philosophy and what's your pay system? And let's create the system. Let's get your ideas. And if it is that you want to compete at 110, 115% of the market because you want to be that city that's out in front, great. Let's adopt the guidelines and the policies. And now you can say, okay, what's it going to take us to fund that? And let's look at the numbers. I would hate for you to give us 400 if we as staff go, you know what, we can accomplish the same thing with 300.
Where they got to go about. Maybe add that to the
side. But
I just don't see these studies going that way, though.
We've never had one, though, that's the problem.
That's the easiest way to never get anything done, to do a study.
True, but it's also I agree with you, right? It's also difficult to throw a dart and expect to get the right answer.
Well,
not that I'm accusing this
party. Usually say third parties are very helpful sometimes, generally. Yeah. And I think it saves us from unintended consequences, oftentimes.
And I know there's some skepticism about, you know, is the study going to be somehow influenced by staff? Or, you know what, we'll step out of the process. Hire a consultant, have the mayor, a couple council members. You know, we're not afraid of the study. And it may come back to say, you know what, for a city manager in that size of an organization, you are top out, buddy. And I'm going to say, you know what?
No raise for you.
I can't argue that. Thank you very much. We don't know. We might identify other positions that says, you know what, you guys are probably missing out because you're low over here in this area. Well, that'll help you as council. I would think you would want that information to say, okay, let's make sure we fund. You know, we talk a lot about police. Fire is a very similar situation. We're seeing it. Public Works is struggling. John can't find people. It's the nature of the economy that we're in that there's a lot of money to be made, and it's really hard to recruit people. You know, John's guys, they're skilled, and they can work for construction and doing similar things, and again, making a lot more money. So we just need to be focused on all that.
Okay, so what about this? As a first move, Mr. Howard and Hensley?
I'm sorry, what?
What about this for a first move? The 7% you anticipate increase in health care costs, Steve, right?
That's from the, no.
That's and what is your anticipated increase in health premiums?
In the budget I incorporated for health insurance, 10%.
10%. Okay. Let's get a group of employees together from each department. And in regards to the COLA, they can choose 3% straight up and they pick up the increase in the insurance, or what does it coordinate to as far as pay? So I remember one time 7%, they said you could have, it was going to be 21% increase in insurance premiums, and the 7% equaled 1% on the pay scale. They did some type of thing. So, and they did some type of formula. And then, as a teacher's negotiation, we had to say, okay, we'll pay for 14% of, which will up our pay increase. So we chose what we wanted. We said you have 3% or 4%, 3% COLA, but any insurance they have to either, if we pay it all, then we give them the 3%. But if they choose, then we deduct it from the 3%. They get to choose which one they have. But if they choose the 3%, then whatever that 10% is, and it wouldn't be 10% as in 90-10. It would be much less than that. And then if we follow that formula going forward, whatever we decide to give, we give that percent, and then they negotiate it, right? So that's my suggestion, is that gets us moving in that direction. Okay? I still think, though, that if we were more aggressive with our insurance, we would actually see additional savings because people would choose to go with them, and especially on the family plan, we choose a different. If you're single, this is your job. You're going to go with the single plan, right? But if you're a family and you have two people working in the family, that's a different scenario. So I'm not giving up completely on the idea. I think the plan is solid, especially if we're willing to put the additional resources to it. In fact, if we put the resources we're talking about, we're talking like a 5%, 5% increase on top of the amount that would be shifted over directly to them. I'm telling you, I think it's the way to go, but I don't think it's going that direction. So there's maybe another idea.
Any other thoughts in regards to the comp information before I move on to topic number 3? Okay. So next is the discussion on the utility rates. This was not in the email that Matt sent out last night. Nor do we have it on the overhead.
Steve, I need one for the record. I'll give you one.
Steve, you can turn the light.
Yeah, I will. Okay, so this is the utility rate proposal. It does coincide with the sustainability model that we worked on in February with Fred when he was here. It was part of the tentative budget that was adopted on May 2nd. It was part of the acting budget that was not adopted last week. This information, so the first page basically is giving you where you are and where the rates would go if they're approved. The yellow is the proposed new rates. This is a 6% across the board increase on the base rates and on the usage levels. The only thing that is not being impacted by this increase that is currently on the utility bills is the road improvement fee. So this addresses water, sewer, storm drain, garbage collection, and recycling. All five of those items. Okay. So last week when we talked about this, it was requested, can we get some information as to how does it impact some of the various users within the city. That's what the next two pages cover. The first one is a residential user with a 3,000 gallon usage level. Okay.
Is that pretty average usage?
No, it's way.
That is going to be applicable to more so your single people, maybe your elderly retired people. Obviously, for a family, depending on the numbers of people that are in that family, that may not be applicable.
Yeah, mine's about 4 or 5, I think.
So that's the first, and what I've done is on the left-hand side of each of these examples is the calculation for the current bill, and then on the right-hand side of the calculation for what the new bill would be if the increase went through. And so that was the first selection. The second selection was again a residential user with 21,000 gallons.
And is that extra high? Like, do we have very many in that category?
Yeah, what are you? Yours is high.
That's like me,
that's probably more a small business or a really big family or swimming pool.
We don't obviously don't have many, but because it is a lot, but it's one of our examples that we had been using in the past as well. And then the other one, other examples are dealing with a fourplex, and then also a medium commercial. Now, on the fourplex, on the medium commercial, you notice there on most commercials, the city does not provide garbage or recycling pickup, so that is zeroed out. But all of that is in there for you to look at. On the far right-hand number that is in the yellow, that then shows you what the percentage of increase on the utility bill would be if the utility rate increase went through. And most all of them range between 5.5 and 5.97%. The reason they don't calculate to 6% is because the road improvement fee is part of that, and there's no increase there. So,
sorry to interrupt. Can I ask a question?
Yes, absolutely.
The 6%, that number is derived from the sustainability study that we did. And it was, so last year we did it, and then it was anticipated or at least thought that 6% would be this year, and that's where it comes from.
Correct. Last year it was a larger percentage, right. I don't know what. Based off the models that we've been working, this year is 6%. If I remember correctly, next year is 4%. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then...
One more question, is that regardless of whatever rate of inflation?
Yeah.
Yeah, that works. That takes into consideration increases in operational expenses and things like that. So that 4% is then suggested to be the rate increase to maintain the operations of the enterprise funds and also to fund the maintenance projects that were put on the project list. So, what does this exactly mean when we talk about a 6% increase? As we just discussed a little bit, it will fund the operational expenses for each enterprise fund and cover projects that have been laid out on the capital facilities plan that need to be done within those enterprise funds as well. A portion of it, because the city does have the utility franchise fee in place, goes towards that as well. It's a little more complicated than that, but I mean, so if you do nothing, for example, and you generate
$500,000 of revenue. 6% of that, which is I think $30,000, will be part of that utility franchise fee. If you implement the fee increase and the revenue then goes up to say $600,000, $100,000 increase, that utility franchise fee then would go from $30,000 to $36,000. It's that utility franchise fee then that is being used and split up. 50% goes to road projects and 50% goes to parks projects. So it, in a way, it's all related as far as how the money goes and is dispersed and expensed and utilized by the city. If the decision is made to not implement any rates and that revenue stays at $500,000, the utility franchise fee stays at $30,000, and then that gets applied to roads and parks projects. So I just wanted to make sure that...
Or it could conceivably does.
No, it does. It's budgeted that way.
Well, yes.
You made sure of that.
We pulled it out for the sake of tonight. So it could be changed.
Well, it's pulled out on the new methodology size, yes. Well, you know what?
What's our current budget?
No, it is not. It's not pulled out.
We could change it then.
Yes, you could. Previous to any changes, it's all been incorporated into being split up as directed in those regards.
So. What do you project to be the total amount of revenue projected by this? How much total revenue increase?
In the water fund, projected revenues are going from $1.72 million to $1.82 million. So,
$100,000. Okay,
$100,000. Okay. In the sewer fund, projected revenues are going from $2.008 to $2.129.
So what is that?
120.
120?
Yes.
Steve,
about 120.
You're okay rounding? Thanks, Steve.
He's driving crazy.
In the storm drain fund, 1.059 to 1.123.
I can't do that.
64,000. In the garbage fund, your dirty garbage is going from $617,000 to $655,000, which is 38. And your recycle is going from $199 to $211, which is 12.
So it's about five, just rounding a lot, it's about $5 a month for the average water user, I would think. Because if 3,000 gallons goes up $3.40, 21,000 gallons goes up $9 and something, then it's probably the $5 or $6 a month average.
How much is the utility franchise? That's 356, 740, or 336, depending.
Do you have at your house what it is for 405?
My house.
356.
3 to 8.
Yes.
I know.
But that's what
he's done before. Is
yeah,
it?
That's true.
So
it's almost exactly.
We average about 5,000.
Franchise fee.
Yeah, so I think it's about, you can safely say around $5 a month per house. It's about $5 a month per house.
Any other questions in regards to the utility rate?
increase proposal.
That's good for me.
Well, is this the appropriate time for
what do you got?
Discussion item on the franchise?
Sure.
Fee, since
So I can be super short. I don't have any issue with the rate increase, so to speak. My only concern is Matt, help me with the nomenclature. The franchise fee that goes to the general fund, which all enterprise funds last week we found out were about $600,000+. I would...
That's not the utility franchise fee, I think.
Yeah, charge for service.
Charge for service.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I would be open to a discussion about no longer having the general fund charge for services, and that the enterprise general fund should cover their own employees, cover their own expenses, and not charge the enterprise funds at all for the services provided.
Okay. So I need to apologize, because when you and I spoke,
right,
I thought you were talking about the franchise fee.
Right, yeah.
And so if it is truly charge for services, then...
Okay. That's why we were saying the wrong thing back and forth to each other, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I can theoretically... I can be persuaded, but I wouldn't mind a conversation that somehow incorporates the idea that the general fund is actually getting paid twice. One time, we're paying the employees with general fund money, and then the general fund is then getting paid again for having paid those employees from the enterprise fund. So, I could just entertain an idea of no longer making that transfer, or at least not to the degree that we're making it.
Well, just to comment on that, then I'm sure Steve's got something to say about it. Because the employees' salaries and wages and benefits that are allocated to those enterprise funds are not included in the transfer in the charges for services. So the charges for services. Okay, Steve's going to correct me. Let me put it this way. My understanding is that the charges for services are for those services that are not directly accounted for out of the enterprise fund, for such things as, you know, for example, John has people that work and they're paid for out of water. We don't ask the enterprise fund to reimburse the general fund for those employees, because they're already being paid for out of water. Mm-hmm. So it would be for those things that are in addition to. So we're not double charging the general fund for those kinds of things. So the only things that, and Steve can be more specific about what is included in the charges for services, but it would be for things that are outside of what the enterprise fund currently pays for by way of employees and those kind of, like, my allocation, am I allocated? I don't.
A small percentage.
In the charge for services?
Yes.
Because I'm not directly paid for out of any enterprise fund.
Correct. Your wages and benefits are 100% paid out of the general fund.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I don't know if that helped or made it even worse.
Well, last week when
Steve,
I asked,
should answer the question.
What were those extra things you gave? There were two answers. Holly, 95%. Janine, 95%. Basically, her job was, you know, billing for that, and stamps, $6,600. So I, in my mind, that's about $100,000. So
no, there's a whole list. For example, when we talk about employees, as far as the allocation, I pulled Janine because most of her time is allocated and dedicated towards the enterprise fund function. But if you go down the list, there's a small percentage of Matt, mm-hmm. Doug, myself, Lisa, Cindy, John, the cash receiving crew down here, each of you members of the city council, the mayor. So a small percentage of your gross salary and wages is then incorporated into that formula to come up with a number. That's the wages and benefits side of it. And then the other portion of it is the operational and overhead. So yeah, the postage, the envelopes, the liability insurance on the property, workers' compensation, the wellness program, because those employees that are, so we have water, sewer, and storm drain, and there are employees that are specifically identified and paid 100% out of those enterprise funds because that's their function. There's no, they're not involved in the calculation. However, because those employees are dedicated towards the enterprise fund, a portion of the wellness program, a portion of the employee appreciation program, those types then are factored against that.
So is this a fair question that some amount is justified, a certain percentage of that transfer is justified, and potentially it's where we currently are is too high? Is that a fair question?
It's a fair question. It's not a fair assumption because I've recalculated everything, and I'm prepared to bring that to the council so that you can see how that calculation is put together, because Council Member Strait has asked for that for a number of years, but it hadn't been done since, I think, 2012 or 13. I found the file, I've tweaked it, and I've worked it more. So I think now, with the way that it is being calculated, what was put into the acting budget for the charge for service, I think, is a realistic and representative number of that process.
So my next question here might seem like it's loaded, and I don't mean it to be loaded to anybody. It's just, this is the question. A $1.37 million transfer was made a couple of years ago. It's been a hot topic, right?
Yes, it has.
Is this a fair question, then? Is this transferring process that we're doing simply transferring $1.37 million or any number periodically and bypassing essentially the need for the council to make that vote to transfer that money? We're just building it into the process.
No, I don't think anything is being bypassed or circumvented through this process.
Okay.
Because there's a difference, and the state auditor in the state code specifically identifies a difference between a charge for service and a transfer. Okay. This is a charge for service in which it's like basically the enterprise funds are reimbursing the general fund for their services. The 1.375, that was a true transfer in which there wasn't an exchange for labor. There wasn't an exchange for goods or services. It was just a decision made by the council that we're going to take X amount of dollars from the enterprise funds and transfer it to the general fund so that it can be used for various real projects.
So, again, not a loaded question, but isn't that a distinction without a difference over time?
No.
I mean, I can transfer something to pay for an employee, or I can build it into the budget and call it a charge for service. It's the same money going from one pot to the other pot.
Well,
or no.
No, I would disagree with you again, because the charge for service, the enterprise fund is actually paying for either an employee's labor and time, or it is paying for some supplies that were used so the enterprise fund could function appropriately. To just transfer money and not have anything received in return, that is where then you have to have a public hearing, you have to do notifications to every single user. There's special requirements that have to be met by the entity in order to do that. So, There really is a significant difference between a charge for service and a transfer when you're talking about it in regards to the general fund and the enterprise fund.
When did we start charging for service?
That was done before I even arrived here.
That's extremely common. I mean, you should, welcome to talk to our auditors, our CPAs. I mean, and I know it's hard because the city owns those enterprises. But imagine for a second, because those are meant to truly stand alone as an enterprise, as its own business, right? Imagine for a minute if it wasn't owned by the city, yet the city staff and people who are not paid for right out of that fund are doing services and providing service to help that entity. Well, we would go, well, that makes total sense. They should pay us back for the resources that we use to help them send out bills and do all of that. That makes sense. But it's a little more difficult when you own that enterprise and you're the city and you have the general fund and the enterprise. But the concept, the principle is the same. Those enterprises should stand alone as a business, and the general fund should be repaid for those. Otherwise, you could argue, why are we utilizing general fund monies that are meant to help with police and roads and recreation? Why are they being used to support the water enterprise? So, I don't know if that helps, but I think...
We were just, as a council, we were put on notice a few weeks ago that it felt like we sold one thing and delivered something differently, you know? And the comment was as though this was maybe a new practice or something that we haven't been doing for years, etc. That's not accurate. We've been doing this for since before you were here. We have a calculation that's a formula that tells us how much to transfer, when and why, etc.
Yes. Okay. And again, in regards to a true transfer, for example, just recently there was a notice published because Ogden City is transferring utility fund money to support their arts council. Okay, that's considered a true transfer in which they notified every user, they're holding a public hearing, etc. They're transferring that money there and getting nothing in return for the utility funds. But they can do that as long as they go through the required processes, which also over the last 3 to 5 years from the state auditor's level have also changed and have gotten more strict in regards to that. And the primary purpose because of that is because, probably more information than you care to know, Kaysville has an electrical, they provide their own electricity. Well, that's what generated all of this discussion on the new rules and regulations in regards to the difference between a transfer and a charge for service, how they're accounted for, and how they're communicated to the residents and the users.
Awesome. Thank you.
Brett?
Thank you.
Okay, so in answer to your question, Councilmember Hensley, as far as that goes, I gave you the paper that shows some history of it. I have absolutely zero concern about the concept and the idea of the enterprise funds paying for a charge for service. My question has always been, justify it, and because it's all over the board, okay? And that's why I brought it up again last year, because the amount didn't seem to match up with any type of a formula. But we're told it does. We're going to be shown that formula. So I have zero concern about that concept of charge for service. Do I have concerns about whether it's an appropriate amount? I've always had concerns about whether it's an appropriate amount. My bigger concern is with the transfer with the franchise fee. That's a bigger concern for me, because heck, we're sitting there compromising over how to use it this year. Okay? So it feels like we're putting money in one pot with the intent of pulling it over here. Now, did we justify it? Yeah, there's a justification. Okay? But what keeps that from not being that? The total amount we're collecting from residents is almost exactly identical to the amount we transferred over for back into the general fund as a transfer, right?
It's a franchise fee.
The franchise fee would be a transfer. It's not a charge for service. We already have the charges for service. If it was a charge for service, then it would be in that category. So, what is it about the road maintenance fee that we all like, or at least me? What I really like about the road maintenance fee is it comes in,
goes out.
It goes directly into that, just like Class B. It's restricted. It's restricted. It can't be used for anything else. We can't say, well, we'd like to transfer half of that over to the general fund or to parks or anything else. So, here's my thought. And this will be a hard thing to swallow, and maybe we can't go the whole distance, but basically, if we eliminated that franchise fee, we didn't have it until last year, raise our road maintenance fee. Now, here's the backside, here's the tough part of doing something like that. It takes that off the whatever amount you have here. It removes that. But see, it's all part of a big picture. What if our staffing levels are not appropriate? We talk about pay. You know, are we staffed appropriately? I don't know, but see, we have to have a study for that. We have tough decisions, and I can't wait to get to that because our wants and needs match up. Now, I'm sustainability and the water and the sewer and the storm and the garbage, that's important to me. But the amount matches up with the part that we're transferring over. That bothers me. I wouldn't mind raising the road maintenance fee because I know where that money's going.
We're going to eliminate the franchise fee.
Yeah, that's tough. But I think what we send to the residents is, yeah, we're going to raise your taxes. We're probably going to do it again next year. We're going to maintain that certified tax rate. But we got to live within our means. And that money we're taking the franchise, we're not living within our means. And it's so tempting to justify that. And that's the tough decisions. That's why I want it sitting right in front of her face. Because when we come out of here tonight, we're going to own whatever we have. I'm not happy about any decision, but we eliminate that franchise fee, then that's $336,000 less on the bottom line. But where are we headed with how we're doing things now? I would suggest that we not be that drastic, but I think it's disingenuous for us to raise utility rates on water, sewer, garbage, and storm drain, only to throw it out the other end in a transfer. But that's what we're telling the residents. And I guess, you know, we can stand by it. We can keep it that way.
And Steve, that's coincidental to the fact that the sustainability model programmed a 6% increase for enterprise funds, which happens to be the same percentage we can charge as a franchise fee to utilities.
Yeah, I mean, last year...
I mean, it is coincidental, but I get your point. Like, how's that perceived by the public when they see you raise it 6% and it's a 6% franchise fee? Hard for the skeptics to accept the fact that, well, it is coincidental because we had the sustainability model that proposed in order to fund our CIP and our enterprises and to maintain operations, we needed 6%. Well, it just happens to be that our franchise fee is also 6%. Well, the same franchise fee as we charge Comcast and all of the other utilities, it's 6%.
If you remember, we were a little concerned about how the road maintenance fee would all figure out. What we kind of learned is people feel confident in that because they know where it's going. I'm paying this fee. Not only do they know where it's going, but they actually see the work being done.
Can I argue a little bit on this idea that money that comes into the general fund is just, I mean, your general fund pays for police, it pays for fire, it helps pay for roads, parks, okay, recreation. And I get the idea that restricted money like your transportation fee is easy to hard account for that because you can show exactly. But this idea that if it's not restricted in that way,
it just disappears.
It just disappears. Well, where does it go? It goes to all of the other decisions we have to make.
Remember,
as
an organization, we kept the road maintenance fee lower. We kept the road maintenance fee lower and said we can pick up, because remember, the road maintenance plan said we needed over $1 million, right? And the council said, well, I don't know if I can go all the way up to that amount. So, well, let's move this over and we'll put it into roads, and that'll get us closer to the million. And we'll do this franchise fee because the water does have impact on the roads and the sewer does have impact. I get that. It makes logical sense to me. That's why I bought it last year, right? That's why I voted for it. Now, you can argue that other council members had other thoughts and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm saying where we are right now is, in my opinion, if we don't use that for the stated purpose of, if the sewer fund has an impact on the roads, then the money from the fees they pay should go directly to the roads. I think people, that makes sense to them. But initially in the budget, in the initial budget, it all went straight to the general fund. And then we had a discussion, and we said, okay, I'll give
half the roads.
We'll go half roads, half parks. Philosophically, that's a bend for me. I had to move myself to even stomach that. And I guess I'd be willing to, I'm still willing to do that, but it's a challenge for the idea that it's just going to all of a sudden go back next year and we have to fight for it again where it goes.
Well, Brent, I may be wrong, and I'd have to go back and re-listen to those minutes, but I do not believe that that was the justification used on the transportation fee. So I think that discussion came in when we said, if you charge your own enterprise funds the same utility fee, or sorry, I'm confused this. Charge your own enterprise fund the same franchise fee as you charge other utilities, that comes into the general fund and can be used for general fund purposes. And the discussion I recall was, well, what does that mean then? Okay, then your property tax rate, that impacts that, because I remember that discussion about, well, if you do away with the franchise fee, that's revenue now that would have to be made up if you wanted to make it up through a property tax. So I don't know, because I'd have to go back and re-listen, but I don't believe that it's fair to say the expectation from the residents was that we sold them that the franchise fee was going to come in to pay for roads. I don't think that's a fair assumption, but I'd have to go back and listen, and I may be wrong, because I don't think that was ever the intent, would be to sell that. It was, no, you need funding options for general fund. You got parks you want to do, you got police officers you're trying to pay, you can raise property taxes. One thing some cities do is they charge themselves, their own utilities, a franchise fee.
That was the argument used when the 1.375.
It was, but don't mix those, because we're talking about a franchise fee in 2017 discussions, not the 1.3 million 5 years ago or whenever for that transfer. Don't mix those, because those are two different discussions.
I think they're the same philosophy.
I disagree. I don't think we sold the franchise fee under the premise that it was going to go to pay for roads. Now, you as a council, as you have done, can prioritize that money every year to go where you want it to go. You want it to go to roads, you want it to go to parks. If you don't prioritize it, it's general fund revenue.
What's the total dollar amount we're talking with the all of them combined franchise fee, give or take?
The utility franchise fee?
Yeah.
Is, in the acting budget, it was $356,000.
Yeah,
$356,000. But one of the concerns that Council Member Strait has talked about numerous times, that is split 50% to roads, 50% to parks. In fact, it was requested or suggested that the council pass a resolution or ordinance doing that. And I don't believe there was any resistance to that.
Council took this out of it, said somebody else, oh, the next council could just undo that same resolution.
Well, certainly they could, but that could happen with any resolution that's in place. But if you have concerns in the next 2, 4, 6, however many years you all are on the council and you're concerned about this, put it in. It's a done deal then. I don't think when this budget was put together, those monies were ever allocated to anything other than roads and parks.
And in the current budget, is it also roads and parks?
In the acting budget, it is. What you went over tonight, it's not allocated.
Right, right. But in the one that you prepared, that's half roads, half parks, two and two, give or take.
Yes. Half of it goes to roads.
Like that. Yes. Councilmember Strait?
Well, it was a compromise, right? Am I philosophically completely in agreement with that? No. I never will be.
Never?
Never. But, you know, it was better than the whole thing just being eaten up by the general fund as a transfer. But I will say that last year in 2017, we passed a cleanup ordinance or resolution where it specifically states that we may make transfers from the utility funds or enterprise funds whenever we want for whatever reason. I'm not sure that's the philosophy of the. It's 111.1 in our code. It's been codified. We've all voted for it. Not by me. But it's there.
So the perfect world for you, if I can ask, is eliminated completely.
Or it goes to roads, because the enterprise funds have an impact on roads. I don't think we justify it. But in the matter of compromise, I'm going to leave it as is, but I want that ordinance voted on by the council. I want a new ordinance specified. Yeah, they can turn it back, but I want to codify it. We codified this other thing. I had no idea it was even going in. I didn't read the ordinance close enough. But we actually codified that.
What's it called?
111.1.
What is it?
So you
111.1.
Yeah. So if you look on in cell phone code, you'll see it. We did it last year. It was a cleanup.
Council Member Strait, I don't know how the ordinance was worded.
That's not the ordinance 17. Number.
Anything that is viewed as code a transfer, it has to have a public hearing and full notification. Just like the utility franchise fee that we're talking about, there was a full page notification put out in the utility bill. It was emailed out. I would say
read that like I read that other ordinance.
Well, I know, but I would say the state code trumps what may have been adopted.
Well, the state code allows it, but we can set a higher standard, correct? So state law, they debated a couple years ago. They didn't go anywhere with it, but state legislature actually debated, I don't know how far it actually went, the idea that cities should not be able to transfer from their enterprise funds. But it didn't pass, and then we codified something saying that we were following state law by but it's May.
Looking it up, doesn't sound wrong.
Anyway, enough on that. I'm willing to stay with the status quo, but of where we agreed with parks and roads, half and half. But I would entertain an increase in our road maintenance fee before our utilities. But at the same time, because I don't think it's a sustainability issue.
Well, I think what has to be decided, and that I would suggest the way to go with this menu is what has to happen, and then how do we get there? We get there with maintaining the tax rate. So we get there with what other increases do we get? How much general fund do we use? And that's where you want to go.
Yeah, we just have one more item.
Okay.
Susan had, and then we can go to that.
Okay. Go for it.
I had a question. I'm not sure if this is what you're talking about. But I was wondering about how much the effect would be for a resident, or the if we went the 0.002639
Okay, so part of the process I have to go through in regards to notifying the county of truth and taxation is creating an advertisement for the newspaper. It will get published, and this I think is going to answer your question.
That's an advertisement in English?
No, in English it's advertisement. In American it's advertisement.
North Dakota.
Anyways, now that they're done harassing me over there. So this is the way that it will be read at this point in time. So South Ogden City tax on a $239,302 residence, that's what is considered the average value of a residence in South Ogden City, will increase from $346.81 to $381.69, which is $34.88 per year.
It's $3 a month.
Do you know how much that number was for last year?
I do not. I tried to find the publication from last year, and I haven't been able to yet. But I do, so I don't have an answer for you on that. Not right now, anyways. Because all the numbers would change. The average value of a residence will change in the stuff. But I haven't found that yet.
We had talked about the ambulance, what to do about the ambulance, whether we leave it alone, whether we address it and pay out part of it.
I think, Steve, you're going to have some numbers for us based on the two scenarios.
Well, I had this for you in regards to, so the ambulance fund has been a finding in our audit for a number of years. It was last year. It's Utah State Code 10-6-117. And the I'll just read it rather than paraphrasing so that you get the full gist of it. If there is a deficit fund balance in a fund at the close of the last completed fiscal year, the governing body of a city shall include an item of appropriation for the deficit in the current budget of the fund equal to A, at least 5% of the total revenue of the fund in the last completed fiscal year, or B, if the deficit is equal to or less than 5% of the total revenue of the fund in the last completed fiscal year, the entire amount of the deficit. So, what that means for our ambulance fund is
The total revenue of the fund of the last completed fiscal year was just over $540,000. 5% of that is $27,000. So what this is saying is that there should be an appropriation in the budget to account for this. Okay.
But that's like a, the 5% is like a minimum suggestion, right?
Correct, it is. And I guess at this point, with the consolidation discussion continuing to progress, there's been discussion in the past that you should be more aggressive, take care of all of it in 1 year, get rid of it now, take it in steps, whatever. One thing that hasn't been discussed is, well, in the ambulance fund, there are approximately $550,000 worth of asset value. There's also over $100,000 of accounts receivable sitting out there. Okay. If the consolidation comes to fruition, something has to happen with that value of money, whether it be, and that's part of what will have to still be discussed within the consolidation process, because there's a number of options potentially depending on how the consolidation is formed. If the consolidation is based on a fee structure, well, conceivably maybe then the fee that South Ogden pays is reduced because of the value that's put into the district. If it's based off of a tax rate type of thing, well, maybe then the assets are sold to the district. But at this point, we don't necessarily have the answers to all of those questions yet. So, I mean, you can be aggressive on this and do whatever you want. I'm not sure that's the best road to go down. Similar to the compensation thing. You know, we're waiting for more information so that you can make the best decision possible. This deficit has been with us for 4-5 years. I'm not sure how long. Is the city going to fall apart if it stays on there for another year or another 2 years until the consolidation item is completed or it's destroyed? I don't think the city will fall apart. Is it something that needs to be addressed? Absolutely it does. I think, though, to have more information, better information, so you can do it in the best manner, you know, that's a decision you all have to make, because
On that real quick, I just acknowledge Chief Jared Shelley from Riverdale Fire here is with us today, so that's who that's in the back, but it's been real helpful in this consolidation. So, go ahead, Brent.
Here's my thoughts. When I sit at the bottom of the hill and I look up, I've hiked the Mount Auburn before. It's tough from this side. It's a long ways, takes a long time. The hardest thing about getting up that hill is starting. And you know what? I think it's a good show of faith. And I know this, if that happens, if consolidation happens, I know it all gets worked out as far as assets and everything goes and how it comes down. But I think this is an important symbolic step of getting up that hill, regardless of what happens. If consolidation doesn't happen, well, we started up the hill. If it does happen, well, that figures in their assets even positive, more positive. So my suggestion is we take fund balance, and I think we do 25% instead of 5. That's significant. It's 25%. I think that's a great step.
How much would that be, Brent?
135, right? Susan? 135,000 to fund balance. I think that's a symbolic move, and I think it's a good direction. So that's an easy choice for me. It doesn't affect our numbers on the paper. It gets us somewhere.
Chief, go ahead, Chief. Your input, your education.
I think we need to do the consolidation stuff, whatever happens. If we don't consolidate, we look at, because we pay 20% of all fire salaries. That's the only revenue we have with the ambulance fund. But whether we change that or whatever, Riverdale doesn't have an ambulance fund. It goes straight to the general fund. But regardless, if we have an ambulance or not, our staffing levels will be what we currently have. So whether we change the percentage of salaries that we pay, I think we need to look at that, but I think the consolidation stuff, we should figure that out first. That's my opinion.
Can I ask, in the consolidation study, is this helpful that the other cities say, as Councilmember Straits indicated, this is a showing of good faith, and that's a good thing for the consolidation groups that are involved, or is it just really a look at the assets and when it's all taken care of in 2 years, well, this doesn't help or it doesn't hurt?
This is latter.
Okay, so it doesn't.
I'm not talking about how other entities feel. I'm talking about us. The fact that we've had this hanging over our head, and we need to, and let's work on it regardless of what happens, if anything. I'm not concerned about how other communities view it. I'm concerned about how I view it. And we just kept building this up in that enterprise funds. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that we'd be messing with a lot of other things, I'd say, let's not have a charge for service to our ambulance. That's like, and put it back into the general fund. But I don't think we need to have that discussion Let's see what happens, right? But I think paying off the 25%, I think it's a good symbolic start. My personal thing is pay off the whole thing.
Can I ask you, Councilmember Strait, it's symbolic of our desire to pay it off?
Yeah.
So it's symbolic to ourselves?
Yes, and to our residents.
Well,
is there an argument that if we do just a minimal amount to tread water until the study gets done, and we find that as a part of the consolidation study, because the numbers that I'm seeing, assuming it could work, that all three cities involved decide to move forward, the ambulance service becomes a very healthy service by way of what we pick up with Riverdale and Washington Terrace. And I don't know how the discussions go. I don't know if the other cities would say, we want you, but we don't want you to bring that debt with us, right? But we're also going to have debt potentially on a pumpulence. Other entities may have debt in other ways as well as a part of all this discussion. I guess my concern would be that we go spend our fund balance that could be allocated to other park projects or other projects or whatever for something that we may find as a part of the consolidation study. They say, you know what, we can make this work. I don't know. That would, to me, be the drawback of saying, you know, how much is this symbolic, how much does that really mean to us? Do we spend that money if we find out that we may not have to, if consolidation works? And that would be my concern. You take money out of our general fund that could go to other things to pay for something that you may or may not have to pay for in the end.
Well, that's assuming that we're going to spend a whole bunch of fund balance.
It's 125,000.
So
that could add a nice thing at Club Heights Park.
And I about having 300,000 of appropriate fund balance, but 135, which is basically the same thing, it's basically an appropriation. It's just changing numbers across from one column to the other. That's all this is. We have our fund balance, we have this debt. if we transfer some here, it's just a transfer. It's just a transfer of some money, right? And
but it's what the transfer is being used
to go 300
is the point.
In the appropriated fund balance to say we can have a park. Okay, well, it's apples to apples. We're trying to get to a different place here.
Now, my point was just how you use that money. I get it. It's no, fund balance.
Yeah, if the
council. $125,000 of fund balance so, to pay off debt that may you may or may not need to pay off based on consolidation discussions, to me, may not be the best decision. It might be worth spending $125 on Club Heights park improvements or other things. That's my point, is how you use
that's
the money.
That's more pressing. Because if the council is willing to spend $250 out of fund balance on this budget, and now you got $135 going to ambulance, now I got $160, I can't remember what I started with, $115 for other projects. Is that right?
Well,
we just look at things differently.
What do you think?
I look at it that the chief has said, I mean, he's the expert in that area, he said, wait a little bit, let's see what happens with that. So, I get what you're saying.
We've been waiting 4 years, 5 years. I remember when it first showed up.
I know, but there has
I was been, in the meeting, but, looking but at the
has,
budget,
but there
when
has
it first
been
showed
change.
Up.
There has been change. I mean, if we said the same thing about South Ogden days, there it's different. There is change. There is, I mean, things can change. We can't just continue to go off of what's happened in the past.
We will pay any kind of interest or anything. I mean, there's no interest on that debt as far as.
So the most the state would require us at this point would be a $27,000 allocation.
Appropriation. It does make our general fund look a little healthier than it probably realistically is at any given time. Right,
the general fund is what it is. The ambulance fund is what it is.
Right, yeah, but by not making this quote-unquote transfer, whatever we're going to call it, it gives the general fund an appearance maybe of being a little more healthy than it is during the year, right? So we'll just call it transfer. However, it's been on the books for years. I take your point, Councilmember Strait, but I actually don't know how long the consolidation study's been realistically looked at. Chief, it's been
a year and a half. I mean, we're to the point now where we're ready to go in front of the councils.
We're getting dang close on it, right? So in your opinion, like you say, it's probably just a little, again, I'll use the word premature to make the decision, but maybe, because we could pass it as a resolution. What's that?
What is it? It doesn't hurt anything. It's numbers on a piece of paper, lowers our percentage a little bit.
Well, we don't know that yet, right?
I'll give a personal example. Sometimes they help. When I got out of law school, I had this student debt payments to make, right? So I come home and we're, it's the first couple months, and I'm like, crap, how am I going to make these payments? So I call the guys, and I worked hard, and I made a $5,000 payment for the second month. Come to find out, if I had just waited, they give you a 90-day period, and the $5,000 didn't help me one bit, right? So, I mean, it was just a transfer, right? I
so
mean,
you decided not to pay it for 4 years.
I'm not going
to
pay forever. But all it did was save me some money a little bit on the back end, right? If I just waited, if I had called, if I had got a little more information, it probably would have saved me at that time in my life some stress and some heartache and some sleepless nights. And so maybe the chief has some reasons to just, well, it may be more than a transfer, it may be less than a transfer, but it doesn't hurt us to do it one way or the other, and it doesn't hurt us to wait.
Right. So it doesn't hurt us either way.
No, maybe it does either way.
Maybe it
we
hurts
don't know.
Us. How does it hurt to fail?
Because the consolidation study may come out.
I understand that, but it's apples to apples anyway.
That's what we're saying is we don't know that it is apples to apples.
it may be, but there might be information that comes out that tells us it's not.
Okay, go to 5%. Do something. Can't go 5%. It's $27,000.
We have to. Something. We have to.
Really?
Right? We have to do the 25%. Yeah, we got to do that.
No, you don't have to do anything.
It'll be another finding.
You can. It'll just be another thing. And I don't know.
That doesn't.
No, I think we should pay the 5%.
June 31st, right?
Well, there's only 30 days of June.
The reality of it is, so
31st of June.
This finding is from fiscal year 2017. There wasn't anything done in fiscal year 2018, so there most likely is going to be another finding. But for 2019, we can put the 5% into the budget to address what I believe will be a 2018 finding. Yeah, because it's going to be repetitive finding.
Then they put their cute little thing in, the city is addressing this, and we're doing the 5%, the city is actively engaged. And they'll put something like that in the audit. That's kind of cute, you know.
Well, I think we definitely pay the 5%.
Okay.
Done with ambulance? Going once, going back, gone.
I just don't hear three people saying the same thing, so.
I'm going to backtrack for just a second. Lisa found the notice from last year's property tax notice. So, this one stated South Ogden city tax on a $209,000 residence.
Wow, it's up $30,000.
Will increase from $275.19 to $333.36, which is a $58.17 per year increase. Thank you, Lisa.
Average house is up $30,000. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Anything else, Steve? Before we start, I think we'd like to start checking some stuff off. Are you ready?
Yeah. No, I'm done.
Mayor? So I think that's everything we've got prepared to discuss. We would love it if we could start getting some things.
Okay, so yeah, that's the presentations. I think we need to put some agreement on either what we for sure want to do, what we for sure don't want to do. You can go two ways. You can start with yes, utility, yes, taxes, and then once we decide that, depends how much money we have to then add these other things, or you can go the other way and say, we've got to have this, we've got to have that, we've got to have that. So, or we don't need that, and then what do we, how do we pay for it? So, think there's a better way?
No, I think either of those, I mean, to the extent you're ready to say, you know what, let's talk about, if you want to start with fees and truth and taxation, and then we get to the menu, or you work in reverse and say, well, here's the things we want to do, and then we say, okay, this is how it translates back to the... Steve, do you have a preference on which way we work? Truth and taxation.
Mike? Adopt the budget that has been prepared.
The one that was presented last time, that's an acting budget. Can we motion things at this?
Yes.
Yeah, it's discussion action. Okay. Yeah, that would be an approach as well, if you wanted. You could go back to the acting budget. Well, that's not the acting budget now.
Can we maybe recess for 3 minutes and less talk?
Yeah, I can use the bathroom break.
Is that?
Lisa?
The public's business should be done in the public.
Right. Yes.
You can talk to one other member, but you can't talk.
Right. But can we recess and regroup for a little bit, talk one amongst us or whatnot?
Yeah, just so long as you recognize the Open Meetings Act there's not three of you, you know, meeting offline. So
I motion that we recess for 5 minutes.
You just want a hot dog.
What's that?
You're just going to go get a hot dog.
There's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion for a 5-minute, I'll round it up to 8. 5-minute recess. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Much water. What do you think it was?
Hello, Lisa.